I'm Adrian. I'm an addict.
Amen.
I'm exhausted. We drove from Boston to be here. But I'm grateful because I get to see my sponsor and I'm able to get off of work for a couple days. Took a couple days off. All right. I'm going to qualify by basically telling you the end of my addiction and the beginning of my recovery. So I lost my kids within 6 months, my apartment. I ran amok. I was doing every drug you can possibly think of. Use your imagination. I obviously do qualify because I'm here. I'm standing up here speaking. My kids were gone like that. Went into court. It was just restraining order for a year. That's it. Custody gone. I threw my paperwork. I acted crazy because, you know, it's what we do. So I flipped out on the judge, told everyone to go F themselves, walked out of the courtroom, and just buried myself. My kids and my life, I was lost. I got 3 charges within that 6 months. I'm sorry, my voice is like, I'm wicked tired. The only way that really got me clean was I got locked up, and then I went to jail for the first. Well, I've been to jail, but this is like, you know, Framingham State Prison. I was like, but I went there. I was forced to go into drug court. When I first saw the judge, I thought I was a lawyer, so I decided to basically stand there and tell him, like, hey, listen, she's not doing a good job. Can I speak? And he says yes. And I'm trying to plead my case of why I should be out and not locked up. And then he said 90 days in Framingham. And I told him to go F himself. And then he told my lawyer to tell me that I needed to check myself because he was the drug court judge. So, of course, for a split second, I thought, oh, I shouldn't say this, and I told him to go F himself again. So I don't recommend that because that really just, he ended up giving me 2 more weeks. He was mad at me. Like, it was awful. I didn't want to get clean. I'm not going to lie. I didn't want to get clean at all. I did not have any intention. I didn't have any motivation. I really didn't. Even though I knew what I was doing was so wrong, but, like, losing my kids was just, like, it just happened so fast. Everything just was, like, poof. So, fast forward, like, I went into the halfway house, and then they were talking about steps. I knew a little bit about NAAA, big stuff like that, but they started talking about the steps and stuff, and I honestly thought, like, and everybody laughed at me, but I thought that you could just do the steps and then you could just use again, because, like, I could just use the steps, get through this crap or whatever, and then I could use like I used before without the consequences, without, like, drowning myself, without stealing, lying, cheating. But yeah, apparently you can't do that. So it was a struggle, you know, you're with all these women, can't stand women, can't stand them. I'm like, half of them don't know how to clean. I'm like, what are you, stupid? Like, I'm like, you know, like, it was awful. I go into the drug court, you know, he's asking me how the house is. I'm like, you tell me, you put me in with 23 women, like, you tell me how the house is. It's awful. He made me go to counseling. Like, I didn't like my counselor. Like, it was, everything was just like, I fought everything. I just fought them. I probably fought with almost every single girl there. Like, I had a problem with everybody. But I didn't realize I was the problem. It was my behaviors. It was how I acted. The things that I said. My thoughts. The way I thought. And then they started talking about getting a sponsor, and, like, honestly, I was the only one in the house that didn't get one for a long time. I didn't want to just grab somebody. Like, I wanted somebody that I could open up to, because I started to, you know, come around a little bit, like, all right, I think I need to do this. I didn't leave because he told me that if I left, like, I'd have 4 years hanging over my head, and I just can't, I don't know, I can do jail time if I needed to, but I really can't. I'm like, I freaking feel like a caged animal. I can't do it. So, eventually, I did get a sponsor. I ended up, it just didn't work out. I went through, like, two or three of them, and then I met Tammy, my sponsor. After like going through the halfway house, going to the sober house, trying to get my kids in the meantime, I was scared to call the court to even see when the court date was. I thought it was gone, but then I found out, and then I had to act. You know, I had to learn how to act in front of a judge and act like a woman and act like an adult and say, like, not be like, ugh, and look over at my ex, you know what I mean, and make faces and say stuff and call them names, which I won't even say the names I called them because it was horrible. And then the judge, you know, he'd tell the judge, and then the judge would be like, oh, did you say? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm sorry. And he's like, you know, how many times do you hear sorry in this courtroom? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. So I had to learn, like, how to behave. Like, it's crazy, like, how, like, I thought what I was doing was right. Like, I thought it was fine. Like, it was just all you guys, not me. Like, it's the judge, it was my probation officer, it was my lawyer. Like, nobody was doing, like, anything for me. So, then I started to come around. I ended up getting Tammy as a sponsor, and I didn't like half the things she said to me. I would just shut down and just sit there. And she's like, you didn't like that, did you? I'm like, nope. She's like, do this. And I'm like, yeah, I'll think about it. I didn't really want to do anything she told me to do because some of the things I was like, I just wasn't ready. You know, I just wasn't ready to, like, I don't know. I guess I had so many resentments, and I just with a lot of people. And, I wasn't ready to let go, I guess, but I eventually did. I listened to her, even though I fought it a little bit, but eventually we started going through the steps, and I learned that in, like, step one, like, obsession, right? And I was like, I'm not obsessed with anything. Like, I don't have any obsession, so I'm look on the question, and I'm like, what the heck? Like, I, like, admitted that I'm an addict, that I am, like, my life's unmanageable, I'm powerless over my addiction. I did all that, and then we have that question, and I got stumped. So I'm talking to my friend, and she's like, we were talking about it a little bit, and I'm like, I don't have any obsessions. I'm like, fine. So she started talking about a little coffee incident, like, where she has to have coffee all the time, and she's taking change out of her kid's jar to get coffee. And then it just dawned on me. I'm like, oh my God, I'm addicted to ibuprofen, so I'm a habitual IB user. Like, I literally, like, had my lance up because I had ulcers. So I just pulled out all this stuff. My neck hurt so bad, so I have neck rub that I burnt my neck so bad, so I lifted up my hair and showed her how bad my neck was burnt. And I didn't even care. I kept putting it on. And then I just looked at her. I said, oh my God, like, obsession. Like, people, places, and things is my point. It's things. I didn't realize that. So, like, the steps helped me, like, realize so much. Like, I'm, like, literally pulling out all the stuff. Like, my ex would be like, hey, I got you ibuprofen. It was like a drug deal. I'm like, what time are you coming back? Like, how many did you get? Like, can you hurry up? But ibuprofen, this is crazy. So then I started learning, like, we started going through all the steps, and I started learning, like, my part, right, my character defects, my shortcomings, and, like, I started to work on those. And I think I can say with a head nod that, like, I've grown a lot, you know, in my recovery, because the things that I used to think that were okay and that I could do or say or act, I just started to change my behaviors. I started learning what my part was and what the other person's part was. I honestly, like, everybody says, like, step four, they're like, oh, it's so hard, I don't want to do it, oh my God, like, they're so scared. I actually was excited for it. I needed to get this shit out. I was so angry. Like, I held on to anger. Like, and anger is a secondary emotion to pain, right? So, like, I'm in a lot of pain. Like, we come in here and we're in a lot of pain. I was so angry. And, like, eventually, like, you know, talking to her and doing everything that she told me to do, even though I didn't like it, I still was open-minded to do it. And then when I started going through all the steps, I started to realize, like, I got this peace, right? Like, I just got this peace. I finally let go of that anger. Like, I don't want to say, like, I still hated him. I just don't like him. And I probably won't ever like him. And I think that's okay. I just don't want to hate him and resent him and have all this anger inside of me so that when I see him, my thoughts are my, this is like, woof. Like, I'll literally think stuff like, if you were inside my like, you don't even want to be there. I don't even want to be there. Like, I'm like, oh my God. So honestly, like, this topic for, you know, do the steps or die. It is so important to do the steps. I did not realize, like, how much I needed these steps. It just, like, guided me into, like, the person that I am today. Like, I'm not perfect. Obviously, none of us are. I have my kids back in my life. They're teenagers, so it's, like, not that fun. I'm just grateful that I even get to see their faces because there was times where I didn't, you know. I fought the courts for years. I fought him for years. I had to stand there and look out the window and not look at him and watch my facial expressions, watch my mouth, because my mouth always gets me in trouble. And watch, oh my God. I started praying on my thoughts, so before I, like, so I'm not thinking it and then it comes out my mouth, because that's dangerous too. I finally was able to, like, talk to the judge without, like, just, you know what I mean? Like, that's not true. He didn't do it. Like, you know what I mean? My hands are going, like, I look nuts. And I'm so grateful today that I look at that crazy woman. Like, crazy bitch going in there and just being like, I need my kids back. And he's like, give it time, give it time. I'm like, oh, really? Because you lost your kids before? Like, he's like, I'm like, so I don't know if it changed me a lot. That's all I can say, honestly. And I'm just so grateful that I was able to do it with somebody that, like, I trusted. Because there were some things in there that even when I was writing my steps, I didn't even want to put them down. Like, I was almost embarrassed to, like, say it out loud to her. But I did. Because I didn't want to. I'm like, this is so bad. She's like, just talk about it. But I did. And today, like, I wake up every morning, I do the just for today. I thank God that I have my kids in my life. My little one, well, I say he's little, but he's 15. I've been seeing him for the last 2 years. I've been fighting for the last, like, 6-7 years. The courts to see him. My other one's 20, so I've, like, have a good relationship with him, but it was like a year I wouldn't see them, 2 years, you know what I mean? It was constant, and she went through the whole thing with me. You went through the whole thing with me. But I think the anger towards the father, like, with doing the steps really helped me get that out. I got it out. It was like, all right. Do I still get angry at him? Oh my God, yes. I can't stand him. He drives me crazy. No communication, blah, 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 like, you know, but at the end of the day, like, I just am just a better person because of him. I really am. It's highly suggested that you do the steps, if you haven't done them. I don't know. I wasn't afraid to do them. I think it was the fifth step that I was a little, like, I don't know. I just hated kind of saying, like, my part and stuff. Some things that I did not want to say. It's kind of embarrassing, just even the nitty-gritty, like, little stuff. So yeah, so today, you know, I can talk about, like, I have a car and I have the, you know, the job and all that stuff, but today I actually really do take the time and be so grateful that have my kids in my life, that I'm building the relationships that I need to with my parents who didn't talk to me for, like, couldn't even pull in the driveway and then call in the cops. You know, and I'm just grateful for that. I get up every day. I do the Just for Today. I pick a principle. I pray. My higher power is, God is my higher power, and I pray to him every single, almost all day. Like, sometimes, like, I'm talking to a coworker, and I'm in my head praying, because I'm like, oh my God, she's driving me nuts. I'm like, God, please take this away from me. Like, self-talk the whole time. So, yeah, I highly recommend doing the steps. Or you can die. It's right there. Do the steps or die. Because I really think that it really gives you, like, this peace with what you've been through and then what we've also done to other people. So, thank you. Adrian, I'm an addict.
Alrighty. I'm sorry, guys. Can you move over here? So, I would like to introduce our second speaker, Jason Fleet, and thank you.
How's everybody doing? I'm an addict. My name's Jason.
Hey, Jason.
You're okay.
I'm grateful to be here, grateful to be clean, even though it's 11 o'clock at night, and I'm not an 11 o'clock at night kind of guy, especially on a Friday when I got up at 4 a.m. and was on the road at 4:45, but it's all good, you know, because I'm grateful to be able to, like, participate in our message, in carrying the message in any shape, form, or fashion, whether it's sharing at a meeting, sharing at H&I, sharing with somebody one-on-one, just being a living, breathing example of the program, right? I'm grateful that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous 25 years ago for the first time, that I bought into the 12-step process. And in that process, when I first came around, I learned something very important. That there's a big difference between what I called working the steps and living the steps. You know, I came around here. I worked steps at a young age of 22 years old. I stayed clean for a really long time. With 10 years clean, I relapsed. I came back 8 years later and surrendered once again. I've got 6.5 coming up on 7 again now. And what I see through my step work this time back around is that I treated step work as an event my first time around. I just treated it as like it was something that I accomplished and an honor I got each time I worked a step. And seeing how my lack of application of the 12 steps and the principles within it is what caused me to relapse, right? And I'll get to that in a little bit. And I'll get to the difference, what I see my first time around working the 12 steps versus this time working around. But just a little bit of backstory, right? By the age of 22, like literature says, I'd fought an exhausting battle with drugs and lost. By the age of 22, I was unemployable. Sometimes could have a job, but like the ability to be employable and hold a job was just about gone. I always had a hustle, but by the age of 22, the hustle was even almost gone. And like there was mornings where it just took everything I had to get my ass up, walk up a hill and down a hill to cop a $6 pill just to get one in me to get enough to get well to get the hustle on all day long. And at 22, almost 23 years old, I was so sick and tired of living the way I was living, feeling the way I was feeling. I've been out on the streets ripping and running since I was 17. I've been using hard since I was 14 or 15. And I was so beaten that I guess I was willing to try anything, right? And what had happened was, I was a champion at kicking dope habits. I kicked my first dope habit at 15 years old. 15 years old, I walked down, I took the subway to Park Heights and copped heroin for the first time on my own. Right, my friend's mom was on methadone. We used to drink her methadone, and we went over one day, and she told me she got kicked off the methadone because she had a dirty urine. She goes, but I know what you guys can do. She told me what subway station to get off on, what hill to walk up to, and what apartment building to walk to in Park Heights to cop. And at 15 years old, I started copping dope in Park Heights and had my first dope habit within no time flat. And I kicked many, many, many dope habits throughout all those years. And I said, this time it's going to be different, damn it. I bought 2 bottles of methadone, a whole bunch of Percocets, and I said, I swear this time, I'm just going to, when this is all done, I'm just going to drink, smoke weed, and smoke crack every now and then when I got enough money in my pocket. And that was my belief. I really meant it inside, right? Inside, I wanted something different, right? I wanted something different deep down inside, right? And I didn't know what I wanted because I didn't know what we have here was possible, right? So, like, I got the 2 bottles of methadone, I got a whole bunch of Percocets from Lexington Market, and I drank that meth and ate them perks within, like, 3 days. And, like, a day later, I was just as ill as I ever was, and I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? And I had, like, so little hope, right? And I went out, and I got my hustle on. I bought 6 pills and put them in me back to back to back to back and fell out for 3 days. And when I came to, as crazy as it might sound, is when I believe the spiritual awakening they talk about in the 12 steps started to happen in my life. Long before I knew NA was a solution to my problem, long before I knew that, like, you know, I was going to work steps and get a sponsor and stay clean, I believe that spiritual awakening started. You know, it says in the 12th step in the It Works How and Why that once we surrender and admit that we can't arrest our addiction on our own or hope for a better way of life, a ray of light breaks through the darkness, beginning our spiritual awakening. And I'm telling you, when I came to after laying on the floor, throwing up on myself for 3 days straight, hoping I laid there and died, is when that spiritual awakening began. And like all I knew to do was get up and go get one more. So I thought, how? Because, you know, the $6 pills were right down the street, but I had no money, so what am I going to do? So I get up, and I was staying in this place right off North Avenue, and I washed my face off, and I looked in the mirror, and I took a long, hard look at myself in the mirror. And at that time, I weighed 113 pounds when I checked into rehab 2 weeks after that day. I weighed 113 pounds. That's like half of what I am now. I hadn't shaved in a long time. I can't grow a beard now. I never could grow a beard, but it's all like straggly and patchy. My hair was all long and matted. I've been throwing up all over myself for 3 days. And I looked at myself in the mirror, and like all this guilt and shame hit me. All these feelings of self-hatred and self-pity, and all these thoughts and feelings of all the things I did throughout the years to like hurt myself and hurt my family all in the name of getting one more. Thinking about like all the guilt and shame from like I used to beat my mother up and take $20 out of her purse when she wouldn't give it to me. When my father would go on vacation, I'd break into his house and steal all his shit. Like I would come over for a holiday to try to come around just so I could steal something out of somebody's purse, and looking at the pain in my 3 little siblings' eyes and wondering where their brother's been for the last 2 years. I was feeling all of that stuff, and I hadn't felt nothing. I hadn't felt shit in years, right? And what had happened looking in that mirror is the process of surrender started right then. And it talks in the first step in the It Works How and Why about many of us can recall the moment of clarity when we came face to face with our disease. And I came face to face in that mirror that day. It goes on to say that all the lies, rationalizations, and pretenses we used to justify where we stood as a result of our using stopped working. Who and what we were became more clear. We could no longer avoid the truth. And that's exactly what happened that day in that mirror. I looked at myself and I said, I had not, first step was easy for me. That first half of the first step was easy. Admitting I was powerless. I knew for a fact that I was a drug addict. I've been a drug addict. I had no control, and the drugs controlled every aspect of my life. That was clear as day. But like all the guilt and shame was so overwhelming, and I cried and I begged God for help. And I didn't even believe in God at that time in my life. I had no belief in God, but I was at such a point of desperation, that's all I could do. Jails, institutions, and death. Luckily, I got the lesser evil of the three. I got in the institution 2 weeks later. And I walked in there. My first NA meeting was 1991 when I was 14 in Shepherd Pratt Youth Dual Diagnosis Program. I went to meeting by accident in 1997. I won't tell that story because it takes too long. I went to a handful of meetings in 1998 because this girl with 9 months clean relapsed the day she met me. With me, and then she made it her life mission to save me, so she took me to a bunch of meetings, and that didn't work. And I went into this facility right with my first day clean on June 26th of 2000, and it said NA meeting 8 o'clock, and I'm like, look, I'm gonna skip them, y'all can do them things, but I'm going to bed 8 o'clock. NA is not for people that use like me. NA is just for like people that don't know what it's like to be me. And they said, it's for you. You're going to go. And I used to sit there, and I used to sit in the back with my mug all broke up. These fucking clowns. And I used to tell them, I said, what are you clowns going to talk about today? I was that guy sitting in the back of the room. And then one day, again, before I knew what the steps were or anything, the second step started happening in my life, right? You know, we don't have to understand this program for it to work in our life. You know what I mean? I believe that once I've reached that point of desperation and I have a desire, right, and the process of surrender started, this program started working in my life without my knowledge or permission, right? And like, you know, so like this second step happened because I'm sitting in that meeting in the back with my mug all broke up, angry as hell with the world, thinking nobody knows what it's like to feel like Jason and use like Jason. And this guy came up there and every single word out of his mouth from the moment he opened it to the moment he closed it was my life story. His relationship with his parents and his father as a little kid, his whole using story. He was 5 years prior sitting in the same seat I was at the same age I was at the time in the same exact treatment facility talking about how he got a message of hope because somebody was up there sharing exactly his life story. And it scared the look. I talk, it's 25 years later, it gives me goosebumps now, still talking about it, right? And like, you know, I got this spark of hope. And after hearing this guy share, I remember something inside me said, you know what, this is what I need. And something inside me said, everything's going to be okay. And that was the moment I surrendered. Looking back, that is the moment I surrendered. I got a little bit of hope, right? You know, hope is to, what's the one thing we need to come here in Narcotics Anonymous? A desire, right? And what's a desire, right? That's the only thing that this program says we need to be a member of in here is a desire. I don't have to want to be, I don't have to know what it's like to going to be clean. I don't have to use certain drug. I don't have to go to certain prison. I don't have to this, that, the other. All I got to do is have a desire to be a member here, right? And I had a desire for something, but I never knew what that desire was. But deep down inside, I wanted something different, right? And what a desire is to want to obtain something. If I desire something, I want to obtain it, right? And what I now understand is hope is to have a desire to obtain something along with the belief that I can obtain it. And that's what began to happen that day in that treatment center. So long story short, I get out, I get a sponsor, I work steps, I sponsor guys that work 12 steps. But like I said, my application of the 12 steps, I could talk all day long about any of the 12 steps. Asked me to share on the step, and I could talk all about my intellectual understanding because I think I'm a little intellectual, right? I can read stuff or retain information and regurgitate it real well, you know. And I thought that meant I worked the steps, and my life was, you know, and like deep down inside, there was a lot of shit with me that I never addressed through that first round of steps. My first four step, I remember when it talks about the step guide at the end, you know, is there anything you didn't tell? You got any secrets or any this, that, and the other? And there was bold-faced lies in my fourth step. It was things that I didn't have enough humility to sit down in front of another man and talk about. And you know what? And even in that step, I said, yep, no lies. No, I'm good. I told the truth about everything. I ain't got no secrets. And I used to, look, it talks in our literature that we can justify the most outrageous nonsense. Right, I would justify that. Well, it says in the fourth step that, you know, we're peeling a layer every time we do the fourth step. I'll get to that layer later, you know. And then so I go through the steps, and like life has changed, and I got a wife now, I got a kid, I got two stepkids. I'm miserable as fuck in the marriage. I absolutely hate being married to this person. And it's not that person, it's not just that person, it's me, but everything in my mind at that point in time was putting it all on this individual. But I was in this marriage and I couldn't get out of it because of the defects I suffered from, but I couldn't be honest about it and tell the truth about it. Like I was seeing all this stuff in my 10th step work and like going over stuff and like in my prayer and meditation, I was seeing how like, you know what, these changes need to happen, but like I couldn't honestly share with somebody where I was at. Right, I was so scared that if I were to tell you that, like, you know what, my marriage is failing, I'm not happy and I want to leave my marriage, you would look at me as weak and less of a man. I was so scared that if I did get up and leave my marriage, I would be exactly like my father was and my son would view me the exact same way I viewed my father my whole life. I was so scared that if I left, my son would turn out to be just like I was. So I decided, you know what, I'm just going to stick and stay and I'm going to lie and I'm going to put the happy smiley face on. And every time Jason opens his mouth in the Narcotics Anonymous meeting, it's going to be all this good sounding spiritual Gucci shit and I'm not going to tell the truth about nothing. And it's okay, because I don't want you to see the reality of who I am, because if you see me for who I am, you're going to hate me just as much as I hate myself. And this is with 8, 9, 10 years clean, right? And it got to a point where I used, with 10 years clean, August 11th, 2010. I remember it's August 11th because that's my birthday. And up until August 11th at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon of 2010, I never once had a desire to use in those entire 10 years clean. I had never thought about it. I never debated it. And I reached a point through a series of events where I was in so much pain. The only thing that made sense was grabbing a bottle of Jose Cuervo in the house I lived in and chugging it. Without an obsession, without a back and forth, should I, shouldn't I. Such a point of pain that that was my only solution. Because of my inability to apply the 12 steps and the principles in the 12 steps. And it took me 8 years to come back. 4 years of coming in and out because me and the wife ended up getting back together. And I was picking up fake key tags. And you know, week before I'm supposed to celebrate a year. Oh, you know, I think I might have used one day in there. I'm not going to celebrate. She's like, you know, you used today. What are you talking about? You know, you're not fooling. You know, I thought I had the world fooled, you know. And I was talking to somebody earlier here today, the 2011 convention of this. I remember I came here using, and I was like, that was the worst experience of my life. Because I was trying to like fake the funk that I wasn't using. And what I understand today is just a new level of surrender to the steps, right? So when I came back to Narcotics Anonymous, I was a... Hold on a second, I want to see. Alright, I got a little bit now. So what happened was, I've been thinking for like 2 months about coming back to Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to get through this real quick, and I'm going to run through all 12 steps, my understanding, experience, and application of them. But I got to a point where I knew this is where I needed to be. My relapse was nothing like my first time active addiction. I come from coke and dope. I come from smoking Ready Rock and Murphy Holmes Projects in West Baltimore. And my eight-year relapse was drinking and smoking weed and maintaining outward manageability and getting good credit and putting more money in the bank and having two cars in the garage and coaching baseball summer, spring, and fall the entire time, looking like $1 million on the outside, had every single evidence that my life was continuing to get better. But deep down on the inside, I was absolutely miserable. My bottom was just as painful as it was that day coming out of that three-day night almost dying. And my bottom was the fact that I can't stop smoking weed all day. And the pain and isolation and emptiness inside. I worked at home. I got up. I worked. I went to some construction sites to check on crews. And I didn't associate with a single person who I didn't work with for a year. Because I get up, I work, I smoke weed, I go to the gym, come home, smoke weed, go to sleep. And I did that for an entire year. I had no friends, I had no interaction with nobody, no interaction with my family. And I was just so empty and dead inside. And I remember one night I was sitting on my bed, and it was the 12th of July of 2018. Clicking, I threw away all my literature, I threw away my step work, I threw away my key tags, I deleted all the NA people off the Facebook, I didn't want to see your stupid stuff anymore because I wasn't like y'all people, I wasn't an addict no more, I don't relapse like you all relapse, you ruin your life and you relapse, I got it going on, I'm not an addict anymore. I believed, I truly believe this, and if anybody's new, don't get it twisted, this is some craziness. I truly believe the work I did in the 12 steps and the service I did in the 10 years I was here gave me the ability to control my use and not my life not go to shit. And that's why after 8 years clean, I still had 8 years using it. I still had it going on. I believed I was not like you people and I would never step foot in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting again. And the only thing I didn't throw away was my 10 medallions. And I remember sitting on my bed, clicking them like poker chips, thinking about how good life was in NA. How good it felt to like have the relationships like I have today with people in Narcotics Anonymous. How good it felt just to wake up and be able to go through 24 hours without absolutely hating myself and having to use. And I got clean the next day, and I came to meetings for 90 days, and I didn't surrender. I didn't pick up a key tag. I didn't say, I'm Jason, I'm an addict. I didn't anything. If you ask me, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. How long you got clean now? You got to have, like, what, 18 years? And I'd say, no, I don't. And I would feel so much shame, right? Or, like, I'd meet somebody new. How long you got clean? I've got 45 days clean, but I used to have 10. You know, I couldn't just be somebody trying to come back and recover from the disease of addiction. But, like, I had this thing, right, that good spirit in my mind, right, in my head and my soul, so to sit there and tell me, Jason, just keep coming back. Go to a meeting every day. And I went to a meeting every day. And something kept telling me, Jason, if you want to stay here, there's one thing you know you've got to do, and that's work the steps. And in 90 days clean, I got a sponsor, I got a home group, I picked up a 90-day key tag, and I started that process all over again. Talks on one of our Just for Today's, I forget which date it is, but it talks about finding a new level of honesty, right? And, like, I sat there, and the step work I did with my sponsor, like, I held nothing back, right? And, like, my first step, right, my first time coming around, my first step was clear as day for me. I knew for a fact that I was an addict, no holds barred, that the disease of addiction ruined my life, but I wasn't too sure about the whole need for Narcotics Anonymous, that separate surrender. But that came real quick for me. Coming back from the relapse, I didn't believe I was an addict. For a long time, it was really hard for me to surrender to the fact that I didn't have control, because I thrive. Control is my favorite drug. If I can control something, I don't laugh. My wife's over there laughing because she knows I'm a control freak. But look, if I fear something, my first reaction is to control it, right? And I feared for years going off the fucking deep end again and dying, right? And the fact that I thought I could control my using is what kept me going for all those years, and the fact that I could prove to myself that I could do it. But like it talks in our first step, the control was an illusion the moment it suggested, right? And like, you know, that control just was had me in the trick bag the whole time, right? But like, I had such a hard time surrendering to the fact that I was an addict. But I knew I belonged in Narcotics Anonymous. It was like the exact opposite as the first time. The surrender to NA came a whole lot easier than the surrender to the fact that I need to, like, you know, that I'm an addict once again. But once I got through that, and I remember the day I felt that surrender, and I felt like I was back in a member of Narcotics Anonymous. It says in the first step, and it works out why the process of surrender is very personal for each one of us. Only us as individuals know when we've truly done it. I remember that day after I came back from the relapse when I felt that surrender for the first time, when something in my spirit said, I'm back and it's good. You know, second step, my first time around, like I said, it began long before I picked the book up. And through work in my second step that first time around with the sponsor, I saw what had begun to happen in my life. And like, it just reaffirmed what had already been taking place in my life. It had reaffirmed that there was, you know, talks in the literature about as we see coincidences and miracles happen in our life, acceptance becomes trust, right? And I started to see how things have been playing out in my life, and I started to see how I went from a place of believing in nothing to now having some belief in Narcotics Anonymous was going to work for me. When I first come around, I told my very first sponsor, I said, look, check this out. I want to work the steps. I want to change. I believe that's what I need, but I'm not going to work 3, 6, 7, and 11 because they talk about God and there's no such thing as God. And I meant it. And he laughed. He said, just give it a try. And I continued to work the steps. I moved on to the third step. And somewhere in there, I started praying in there. I started praying in the process. And I worked through the third step. And I started reading in the literature. And that whole God of my understanding thing started to become real. Now, my understanding of my relationship with God today, you know, many, many years after this process started, is 10 times completely different than what it was. But I continued to, like, just move on in spite of, acting as if. Like, I just believed just because I was so desperate back then to believe, right? But, like, what I understand today, and the first time around, it was explained to me, like, Jason, you know what? You don't even know what your will in your life is. Best way you can do this is continue work the rest of the steps. And, like I said, my first four step, I left a lot out of that four step. I wrote two other four steps when I was clean for those 10 years, I never went over either one of them. I got 3/4 of the way through one. My ex-wife read something in there she should not have read, and I said, this is nothing but trouble. I'm done with the book. Years later, many years later, I wrote another 4-step and was so disgusted with the individual I found in that fourth step, I threw the book under the cover, under the bed, and never looked at it again. And I relapsed 3 weeks later after I stopped writing on that fourth step. It talks about in, I think it's in the fifth step or the sixth step, that our secrets die in the light of exposure, grow in the darkness and die in the light of exposure. Well, it was real dark with that step work under the bed. And like the fifth step for me, right, this time, when I went over my fourth step, I told my sponsor, I said, look, I'm going to tell you some things. I left out all my step work before. And he's like, all right, I can't wait to hear this. It's going to be some good stuff. And we go over my fourth step, and we're like, you know, fourth, fifth step stuff, identifying the exact nature. Like, why, Jason? Why, Jane? Why did you stay stuck for all them years in the marriage you didn't want to be in? Why did you do this? Why did you feel this way? Why, you know, going through all that. And we get to the end, and he's like this. What, you left it out. He was waiting for this big craziness. And I said, well, it was that. And he's like, that ain't even heavy. But to me, it was something inside me that I swore was never coming out, right? But like to be able to sit there and truly put everything out and lay everything out on the table. My sponsor's a bit of an intimidating guy. Now that I know him a little bit better, he's not as intimidating as he was, you know, 6 years ago. But it was like tough to sit there and like look a man in the face who's like, you know, big, you know, heavy, kind of like sometimes mug, broke up looking dude, and get vulnerable, because I'm the kind of individual, I know about myself, I do not like to ask for help. I'm the helper. I don't need help. I'm the one who helps. And but like, you know, through going through that with him, identifying the exact nature of my wrongs, and the sixth and seventh step for me, and tell me if I'm going too long.
We'll give you a thing. We'll show you 5 minutes.
Okay. Okay, I thought I already got the 5 minutes. I've seen that.
Oh, no.
Okay. The sixth and seventh step for me is where a lot of change happens, right? First three steps is the foundation for what this is. First three steps gives me the spiritual surrender that I need in order for this process to work and true change to happen. Fourth and fifth step introduces me to me and introduces me to why I'm me. Right? And that sixth step is where I truly begin to see the disease of addiction for all it's worth. It talks in there that the sixth step is a three-part process of reaching a spiritual state where we have a heightened awareness of what we suffer from, become sick and tired of being sick and tired of who we are, and coming to understand that only God can remove the defect, right? And it's like, for me, the sixth step always worked. It's like I'd start to see it, or like at the end of the day, or like talking to my sponsor the next day, I'd be like, you know, I did this yesterday, I acted out on this defect, this happened. And then it would be like at the end of the night when I'm laying down, I'd start to think about all like the things I did and how defect ran my life that day. Then it would get to be like, you know, an hour or two later after I acted some kind of way, it'd be like, damn, you just did that, you know. Then it got to like the fact where I'd be in the defect. I'd be in the lie. I'd be in the manipulation, whatever I was acting out doing, in it. And getting that awareness. And still not able to stop myself. Then it would be like, you know what? You're getting ready to act out. And still powerless over acting out. To the point where like I became so sick and tired of living the way I was living. That I reached that state that we need to get into for that seventh step to actually work. And the talks in the works now why in the seventh step that like some that all the steps tie together at some point in time, but there's probably no finer line between two steps as between the sixth and seventh step. It seems that the seventh step is almost an afterthought to the sixth step. I believe that once I reach that state that I talked about in the sixth step, that at that moment is when I have the humility to come to God and be like, I need some help. Once I reach that place where I see what I suffer from, sick of living that way, understand I can't do it on my own, that's when I have that posture of humility in my spirit. Not the way I ask God, being all humble on my knees, but that posture of humility in my spirit, knowing that like I cannot fix me and I'm broken and I need help. And that's when I'm able to go to God and get some real change in my life. Eighth and ninth step for me, my first ninth step changed my life deeply. The man I hated my whole life, I hated my father with every ounce of energy in me. I've never seen the man cry. I've never let him see me cry. I never told him I loved him. He's never told me he loved me. That's just not what we do. And by the end, I sat down. It was the only amend I didn't make. And it was a long time. I would go to his house and I would just put it off because I was so scared. I'd be trembling, shaking because I couldn't just talk to my dad one-on-one. And one day I said, Dad, sit down at the table. I got something to talk to you about. I put my head down and I blurted out a bunch of stuff. And when I looked up, he had a puddle of tears on his face. And he goes, I don't know why you're doing all this, but I got some things I got to tell you too. And he goes, and at the end, and he said, you know what, I love you. And that's the last time we told each other we loved each other, but it's okay. 20-something years later, we got a great relationship still. You know, my eighth and ninth step this time was a little bit different because my harm was a lot more subtle, right? I didn't do all the ripping and running and stealing and manipulating, but I still caused just as much harm in these relationships. My 10th step, 10, 11, and 12 is what helps me keep it all together, right? My 10th step is like learning how to check myself before I wreck myself. Being able to see myself for what I am and who I am. It talks in I believe, in the step working guide about a preventative and a corrective action in that step. And I believe that the more I can prevent, the less I need to correct. If I can promptly admit to myself that I'm thinking and feeling wrong before I act wrong, I don't have to come to you and apologize to you for treating you bad. If I can like strive to be aware of myself throughout my day and how I'm thinking and how I'm feeling and stay connected with God before I allow the disease to creep in and act out, it's going to save me a whole lot of having to come and tell you I'm sorry because I done hurt your feelings again, right? And like that 10th step gives me the ability to move into the 11th step and really have a fulfilled relationship with God in my understanding. Talks in the Works on Why in the 11th step that the steps are designed to remove the barriers that stand in the way between us and God's will. And that 10th step helps clear away all my bullshit to get me in a position where I can like get in tune with God. But then the more in tune I am with God in the 11th step, the easier I am it is for me to see my bullshit in that 10th step. For me, those two kind of work synergistically with each other. And then the 12th step's what it's all about, right? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. Right, I thought that spiritual awakening was going to happen at the 12th step, but I see that it's something that had been slowly starting ever since that first day. And every single time I've shared the truth about myself or put myself in an uncomfortable, vulnerable situation with my sponsor through step work, every time like I had this insight into something new about my character and how the disease of addiction affected me, that spirit awoken just a little bit more. So it's like, you know, as a result of that, practice these principles. Practice, you know. I had stuck in my head that first time around that with 10 years clean, worked all 12 steps, sponsor guys that worked 12 steps, I was supposed to be fucking perfect and I couldn't come to the meeting and tell you all I'm fucked up and I'm hurting, right? But like understand that I'm just human, that I need to practice these, that I'm going to fall short. And as long as I continue to strive to practice the principles of Narcotics Anonymous, that's what it's all about. And then carry the message. Can't keep what we have. We can only keep what we have by giving it away. Being of service, being available, not texting Tammy at 2 o'clock when I was texting my wife saying, I think I'm feeling sick. I might text Tammy and tell her I'm not coming today, even though I wasn't feeling sick, but my mind and justification told me I was. And continuing just to show up for the process, to give me the cut it off sign. I knew I was getting it any minute now. So thanks for letting me share.
I would like, my name is Erica again, I'm an addict. I would like to thank Adrian and Jason for sharing a great meeting. As a reminder, the entertainment for tonight will be karaoke and bingo. I think bingo's already over, but yeah. And then tomorrow, karaoke in the Owens Room and Karma, the ultimate rock band in the Warfield Ballroom. They both start at 10 tomorrow. And don't forget to visit the merchandise, the hospitality, and coffee stations. And thank you, everyone. Yes, we will do this right. Okay. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to